Good morning. I know Lori's here, and I know that Phil is here, and Andrea and I, and someone else is here, right?
Well, Debbie, Phil's wife is probably listening. So,
Oh, awesome. Great, great. Well, thank you so much for coming. It's such a treat and an honor for me to share my passion, a lifelong passion, really, of birds and ornithology, and especially birding by ear. So first, I want to thank those of you who are here for coming. And I also need to spend and thank CCB for allowing us to do this. Special shout out here to my lifelong friend, Andrea DeKlotz, who is hosting today and also my audio editor and anchor, and just making all of this possible. I can't thank you enough for that. So what I'm hoping to do today is share some techniques of birding by ear that make bird identification easy, and do that by introducing you to some bird voices and discussing some patterns of bird song, discussing the differences between songs and calls and complexities, and provide some resources where everybody can continue your birding by ear interest, because certainly this is not something I own. The exciting news is that the two main pastimes throughout the world are gardening and bird listening, watching. And with the advent of new technology and tools, blind and low vision individuals can participate more and more in the citizen science programs of sharing bird knowledge that are sponsored by the Cornell Lab of Ornithology, Audubon, World Wildlife Union, and others. And in addition to that, you can just have a wonderful, roaring good time, because this time of year, the daylight stars are out. And when I say the daylight stars are out, I'm referring to the birds, to bird songs. And we're going to listen to 8 species throughout the next few minutes. And I chose them for particular reasons. And that'll become clear as we move along. And I will leave plenty of time for interaction and questions. And we're a small enough group, you know, we could even have questions interjected if you wanted to do that. So we're going to start with our first bird. And in all the other cases today, I will tell you exactly who you're hearing before we play the clip. But for this one, I want you just to enjoy what you hear. And after we've listened to this particular bird, I will ask if anyone recognizes her, him. This bird, I'm willing to bet that even if you don't know the name of this bird, you've heard this bird in the wee hours of the morning and at dusk, and especially in the springtime. And I have a lot of reasons for picking this bird. We're going to let this clip play for a little bit so that you can close your eyes, don't close your ears, goodness, and get into the mood. You'll hear some background sounds, and Andrea, I will give you a little cue when it's time to pause the recording. So if we could go ahead. Thank you so much. Does anybody on the call know who we were listening to? Well, hearing no one, I will tell you that what you were hearing is the song and then call notes of the American robin. Was that a familiar sound to any of you?
Yes, and when you said that you hear them in the middle of the night sometimes, it's true.
Yes.
You remember weird times.
They will start up in the middle of the night. Yes. There's several reasons I chose this particular recording. First of all, you'll notice there's a lot of background. I do not have specialized recording equipment, but I've made some really good recordings on the phone. This was actually done on a Braille note taker. However, the reason why I wanted to share that recording was to tell you that you often don't get a choice about when you're going to record. You hear something and you need to catch it on the fly. So you just go for it and do it. And I've gotten better over the years, but I just wanted to share that with you because, you know, the birds don't wait till you get your perfect setup. They're ready when they're ready. So there are several reasons I picked this bird. First, the American robin is the most widespread thrush, T-H-R-U-S-H, in the United States of America. Thrushes are a particular family of songbirds that are well known for their melodious, rich voices. And robins are just about everywhere. If you have a backyard and you have a lawn and you have a berry bush and you have some insects, pretty good chances you have robins and all year round, but especially in the springtime. In California, they don't leave us. People who can see are drawn to their beautiful red breast and their sky blue eggs. They lay two or three eggs when they nest. Now, you may have noticed as you were listening that the first thing you heard was the robin song. And we want to talk a bit about songs and calls here. A song is a bird's complex vocalization. Complex meaning it has a particular cadence and rhythm and many parts. A song is not always melodious, although it is in the case of the robin. And you may or may not know that birds make their songs, that songbirds, the particular kingdom of songbird, not kingdom, the order or family of songbirds, make their songs because through two voice boxes. They have something called a syrinx, and instead of one set of vocal cords like we have, they have two, and that allows them to line up pitches and cultivate harmonies and move them back and forth in really interesting ways. And so that's what a songbird is able to do. They have these two voice box, and they can work that way. You may have noticed a particular rhythm. Maybe you heard chirlet, 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 chirlet. Chirlet, chirlet, chirlet. It was coming out in groups of three. You may have noticed that some of those notes had a liquid quality to them, but there was also just a little bit gravel in there. Chirlet, chirlet, sometimes. And what's interesting about that is that robins, although they have an innate song, vary it according to the part of the country they live in. And in California, our robins sing at a higher pitch. And in Wisconsin, their voices are lower. And that is an interesting thing that we're learning about birdsong, is that it can change according to where you live and according to whether or not your birds speak a particular dialect. So I'm using this particular bird, our robin, to do an overview of what we're going to do for the rest of the talk. You also probably heard later in the recording a sort of squeaking sounds. Maybe you heard hip, 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 hip. I call those the fat notes. Those are robin calls. The differences between calls and songs are worth noting. Songs generally appear only in the spring months, the lengthening light months when birds are setting up housekeeping and raising their kids. Call notes can be uttered all year long, and they have different purposes. Songs have the purposes of announcing a territory. A young robin who's seeking a wife says, "I live here, I live here, I live here. Come here, come here." And he says to the other robins, "Oh, you think you've got a nice voice? Well, listen to mine." And so that's what's going on with that song. A robin will also sing when a female is on a nest. And by the way, female birds sing too. So those are purposes of songs. Calls have many purposes. There are warning calls. The calls that you heard on this recording, that pip, 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 are feeding calls. The robins that I recorded were hopping all over the lawn, and they were after insects and worms. And that's a little communication call, food, food, I'm here. And it's also a call that they make in the evenings. But birds have other calls that they make. Calls are less complex vocalizations than songs, and they have differing purposes. So a Buick's wren, when it wants to warn you, says buzz, 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 zzz, zzz, buzz, buzz. A baby mockingbird, when it begs, there are begging calls that infant birds use to get foods. It spreads its wings out. Take your arms and spread them out all the way shoulder wide, and then you would hear this sound. Mwah! 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 I kid you not. That's what baby mockingbird begging calls sound like. Baby chickadees, when they're hungry, say zee, 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 zee. So if you really get into this science, you start learning not just the songs, but all these other calls. Well, it's springtime, so that could be the begging call of a whatever. And of course, there are a lot of tricks to that because some of the calls seem to mimic each other. Don't worry about the complexity. I'm just saying there's this whole field of things going on here. So I chose the robin because it is the most common thrush, because it illustrates very well the bird's double voice box, that the two reed voice box, the syrinx, because it allowed me to share with you the complexity of song versus a call note. And because it allowed me to say a little bit about habitat and appetite. These birds eat a lot of worms and insects, especially when they're feeding their kids. One of the reasons why you would find it hard to take care of an orphan robin is that you would have to give it 400 insects a day. I don't know about you, but I'm not that good a hunter. And so that's what I wanted to illustrate there. And so those are my main reasons for starting with robins first. If you have a neighborhood that has any kind of tall trees plus bushes, and especially if there are any grass areas or tan bark areas, there's a pretty good chance you'll have robins. And this is a pretty good time of year to hear those robins. And they can start up at 4 a.m. They can sing late into the evening. But that's who they are and what they do. And I will save this talk for another day. Like all bird species, they may be in trouble. That's my ecological message. We will not dwell on it today, but if you ever want me to come back and do a talk on bird ecology and indicator species and things like that, I'm happy to do that. I'm going to go on to the next bird, but before I do, does anyone have a question? Because since we don't have a large group, we can be a bit interactive, I think.
So, how did you learn all this stuff? I'm just amazed. And I like how you tell us, because I took a Hadley course and it was a little bit interesting and a little bit difficult.
Wait, Hadley has a bird course?
They did. Yeah.
I got to check that out. Now you just helped me out because I'm building a Let's Share resource database here. I got to talk to you about this offline, okay?
I ordered it and I got the CDs of the bird course. So check with Hadley and see if they still have it.
Well, we're going to add that to the list of resources here today, which we will spend some time with. So Christy, I have been doing this since I was prelingual. When I was a very small child in Michigan, before I could talk, I was aware that the sky was speaking all the time. Not all the time. It had some terrible silences, especially in Michigan, but especially in the spring and summer, it was speaking all the time. And when I was very tiny, before I understood science, I believed that birds helped the sun come up and go down. I thought that, you know, the dawn birds went and got it in the morning, and the evening birds, helped it go to bed at night. I also thought that flowers could bite you until I learned that that was a pollinating bee I had bumped. But I had my own peculiar science. But what happened was that, Christy, I had a superb mom, and she saw that interest and fed it. She purchased me a set of recordings called Song and Garden Birds of North America by National Geographic. And it taught me about geography, too, because the narrator would talk about what part of the country they were in and why the birds, you know, what the birds were doing there and how they were singing there. And I would spin those records while I was doing my homework. And you know how children's brains are. They're just little sponges. Mm-hmm. I just started taking it all in and picking out birds in the neighborhood. And we'd go to another part of the country and I would pick something out. And I just grew it from there. Had I had a bit more of a science education, I might have ended up as a professional ornithologist. as it was, I became one of those lit people who write poems and do lyrical things. But the birds have always been in my heart and in my life, and they are probably my through line for my whole life. You know, there's been a lot of them. There've been horses and there's been reading, but mm-hmm. and guide dogs, but the birds are really it. So that's my answer. But what I want to say to you is that anybody can learn this. This is all available, especially with more and more tools. And we as visually impaired folks are welcome to do it. And the first way to begin is to just listen and wonder and then follow your curiosity. I don't need to tell you that blind people don't have better hearing than other people. Sometimes when I give this presentation to sighted people, I have to say that because there's this crazy myth. Mm-hmm. But we do know how to listen deeply. I want to move on, but do we have another question? Because I don't want to ignore anybody's questions.
I think we're okay. We have a small group, so you guys don't necessarily need to raise hands, but if you don't hear somebody, go ahead and just speak up because we're not a big group. So go ahead, Susan.
Okay. I'm going to go into some techniques that can help you identify what you're hearing because birds they fall into some dependable vocalization groups. And the first one we're going to talk about are the trillers. And if you play a musical instrument, you know what it's like when you trill a note, da 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 da, right? And sometimes it's a slower trill, da 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 da, and sometimes it's da 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 da, and sometimes it's so fast it's on the same pitch. And so I have two examples of trillers for you. And the first one we're going to play, it's your number two, Andrea, and it's the song of the dark-eyed junco. And I think this clip is not too long to play the entire thing. I think we're okay. Perfect. Perfect. That's a nice short one. Did you notice you could actually count the trills? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. And then you may have noticed toward the end that he said 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Did anyone hear that? You can just, I'm pretending I see your nods. That's a variety of junco song. They also have a dawn song that's very fast. It goes. And I didn't know until 3 years ago that they had three different songs, and they have this dawn song. And then what you heard there was the midday song and then kind of an evening song. Dark-eyed juncos are relatively small birds. If you opened your palm, they could fit inside your palm. They are seed eaters and insect eaters. Just about all birds are insect eaters. They like coniferous trees, so they'll like things like redwoods, but they also like a lot of bushes. And if you have any pines or anything like that in your area, they will frequent those. They're very loud dawn singers, and they start their singing in the early spring and go through the summer. And they do not tend to migrate from California. I'm trying to pick birds that are residents. However, they're very quiet in the winter. But that's what they sound like. Now, just to confuse us a little bit, let's listen to another triller. This gentleman or lady is called the spotted towhee. Okay, perfect. Now that, I must apologize for that report. Because the background was a lot louder. I'm going to ask my friend Steve Dresser if he can help me mix these because he can pull out a lot of the crap. Forgive the bad language. The spotted towhee was going brr, 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 and you may have heard in the background a little cheep 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 cheep. That was a background house finch, and I tell you that because when you are trying to isolate a sound, it's so easy when you listen to a record and it says, this is a house finch, and okay, I got that. And then you hear it in the middle of all these other birds and say, what was that? Likewise, you may have noticed when we heard the American robins that you heard mourning doves in the background going, woo, 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 which is their nest building call. But that spotted towhee is another example of a triller. These birds love to live on the ground and in brush, and you'll often see them running around in the bushes. They like waist-high bushes and bushes close to the ground. They do a lot of foraging in the leaves to pick up insects. They have a nice little relative whose name is a brown towhee, and that little guy goes peep, peep, and he likes to fly at his reflection in your car mirror. So people who see a bird kind of pecking at your car mirror, it's a pretty good chance it's a brown towhee. The spotted towhee also has a little evening call note when they're before they go off to bed and they're preening. They'll say, "Zreet, zreet, zreet," and so that's another one. But when you hear these buzzy, trilly kind of calls, it's very likely that you are hearing a dark-eyed junco, a spotted towhee. There's another one that I did not provide you that's called a belted kingfisher. But just get used to thinking of bird songs in terms of groupings, and that can actually help as you move along. I'm going to move on now to a bird that's a whistler. And this bird is called a golden crown sparrow. And this bird will be leaving us in April to head back for Alaska. They spend their summer up there and they breed in Alaska and then they come back to us in the fall. They're one of the larger sparrows. They would fit into your two hands and they love bird feeders. So let's hear the golden crown sparrow. This is a whistler. I am leaving. That's my mnemonic for the golden crown sparrow. I am leaving. And sometimes just I am. They were very well known in Alaska. The miners used to call them the sad birds because they thought that was kind of a mournful song. I've always found it very reassuring. They would gather in the trellises outside our kitchen windows in the fall and in our oak trees and my mother's kitchen garden while we were eating dinner. And it always made me feel like winter was safe. Like when the golden crown sparrows came back, I knew that things were going to be okay. They do frequent the whole coast of California. You may not hear them too much now, although you might as we get into April. But when September comes, keep your ears out for that, I am leaving, and that will be your golden crown sparrow. It's a very pretty, and they're friendly birds. They'll stay at feeders all winter. They really enjoy it when we put out millet or corn or even suet. They actually like that. Got a few more, and then I want to take more questions.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
I hear one that goes dee 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 dee, and I thought it was a chickadee.
It could be a chickadee. Most of our California chickadees don't have that chickadee dee dee song, dee 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 dee.
Yeah,
that could be a Buick's wren. If you want to record, and I'll issue this to anybody, if you want to try to record that for me, Christy, and send it to me, I will be happy to tell you. It sounds like one of the many songs of the Buick's wren, and boy, they're all over the place right now. That's a cool sound, isn't it?
Yeah, it's up in the mountains. It's up in the mountains when I hear it, and then they come down I hear them down by where I live just for like a day, and I get so excited when I hear them.
I am not sure, but I would love it if you would. Yeah, I'd love it if you would send it to me because
if I can record it, I will.
Yeah. I'm thinking of a couple. A chickadee might do that. Some of the nuthatches will make that sound sometimes too. Although your version is more melodic, and the nuthatches sound a little bit more like the hold. So
I can hear them. They call to each other, and you can hear them calling to each other, and I just love it.
I do too. I feel so alive when the birds, and I struggle. I am, you know, Persephone underground in the winter. I hate the off season. You know, it's really hard for me. let's see. So we did. Okay. Now we're on to two. This one is what I'll call a Twitterer. And this is actually a decent recording. This is a little bird. If anybody knows the size of a canary, it's a very, very small bird, and it's yellow like a canary. Could fit in the palm of your hand easily, even a woman's hand. If that was a sexist statement, I apologize. It can fit into a small hand. Well, that's all we'll say. This bird is called a lesser goldfinch. I don't know why it's lesser. And it is bright yellow like a canary. And it has patches of bright yellow on its breast in the spring. And it eats tiny, tiny little seeds like millet seeds and dandelion seeds. And I want you to hear this song. And you will hear this bird all summer long. So this is Lesser Goldfinch.
Participants can now see your screen.
I wanted us to hear a lot of that song because isn't it complex? It's twittery. It's got some, there's a little gravels in it. It's the phrasing changes all the time and it moves all around in what it does. And they vary their phrases quite a bit. Donald Kruzma, who's one of my heroes in the bird world, does a lot of analysis of sound recordings. And he's calculated that these little lesser goldfinches sing something like 15 varieties of song, all on that basic pattern. But if you chart the up and down and the ripples of sound, everything, that is what you'll hear. These guys are really cute. If you have I know lawn sprinklers are not a good deal because they waste water, but we have seen golden crown sparrows fly in and out of the spray to get an air bath. Just like, I mean, to get a water bath, a mist bath, just like hummingbirds will. And they will sing all summer long. And they have a very sweet little call notes that just goes, cheer, cheer, cheer. And I have a recording of two of them going back and forth, cheer, 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 cheer. And I have yet to know whether that's a breeding pair because I didn't have the advantage of sight. I don't know if that's a duetting that goes on during nesting time, but it's one of my favorite summer calls. And even after the singing stops, these birds will go into that cheer, cheer. You're very likely to hear them all over California. I didn't put in the house finch, and I should have, because that bird is very vocal also. But so that is a Twitterer. And the last sound that I want to give you is the warbler sound. And I must say that this is a little misleading. A warble is like a very fast twitter. And it belongs, there's a whole family of birds called warblers that make this sound. But there's also a lot of other songbirds that fall into the category of warbler singers. And I chose one of my favorites. It's called a warbling vireo, V-I-R-I-O. This is a bird that everybody tells me who can see that he is incredibly hard to spot because they like to bury themselves in deep foliage and camouflage before they deign to sing. So you might hear this bird long before you ever see it. And that's why we are so essential to bird ID teams, because more than 60% of bird identifications are made first by sound and then by sight. And this is a bird I recorded in my own complex where I live. And I do apologize for the quality of these sound recordings, but my goldfinch wasn't too bad. Anyway, let's listen to the warbling vireo.
Participants can now see your screen.
Okay, so that the dominant song that you heard that's your warbling vireo. If you heard a little drumming in the background, a little brrr, that was probably a red-shafted flicker. Now, I wouldn't stake my life on it, but you can tell woodpeckers apart by the way they drum with their bills, and I think that's what we heard in the background. We also heard one Buick's wren in the background, but the dominant bird that you heard there was the warbling vireo. These birds are found a lot in woodlands, and where I live, even though we've got a doggone road making a racket, there's a mile-long road that has lovely oaks and sycamores and madrones and a few redwoods along it, and we also have a creek, and they like riparian environment. So I get to hear the warbling vireos often. You might not hear these as often in your urban gardens, but if you go hiking in Topanga Canyon, or if you go up on Skyline Boulevard, if you're in the north part of the state, or I mean, I can tell you where you might hear that bird. I chose it not so much because that you might hear it every day, but to give us another category of sound. So what we've covered so far are birds' voice boxes, the syrinx, the double voice box. The robin is a thrush. We've covered differences between songs and calls. We have covered some varieties of sounds that we would listen to, such as trillers, whistlers, twitterers, warblers. And when you, I'll be telling you momentarily about an Audubon course that you can go to online, and they divide the bird sounds and songs into these particular categories. And that makes it easier to learn the bird songs. Some people rely on something called mnemonics to learn bird sounds. That is to say, they find a word or phrase that that catches the sound. Christy and I can tell, we like to just find the notes and sing them. But for instance, there's a marsh bird called a red-winged blackbird. And one of the two of the mnemonics for that are gurgly and conquery. That's what people say those birds sound like. They're saying there's a bird in New England called a wood thrush. And the mnemonics that people have come up for this gentleman are, why don't you come to me? Here I am, right near you. And the reason for the dips in my voice is that the bird song moves up and down in that way. The mnemonic doesn't really capture the resonance and the beauty of the sound, but it's a way to find your identification. Similarly, the black cap chickadee says chickadee dee dee dee, chickadee dee dee dee. So that helps people know what they are hearing. There's a bird on the East Coast called the rufous-sided towhee, and the mnemonic I learned for this bird was hot dog tea, pick-a-lickle-lickle. So people come up with crazy stuff, and the good news is it doesn't matter. You just find what works for you, and move into that song. I kind of prefer to try to get the musical quality to it. The other thing that I wanted to say is that it's a myth that only male birds sing. We are now learning in the field of ornithology that at least 50% of female birds also sing. Now, you might say, well, why did we think only male birds did it? Well, the reason is that in Europe and in North America, where a lot of the early bird science work was publicized, it is true that by and large part, the male birds who also have the colorful body markings are the singers. And the females who have a plainer, I don't like the word drab, a plainer appearance, are more of the collars. But in recent years, we have found out that that's not true. In the United States, our female Orioles can sing beautiful long songs. So can female Buick's wrens. We also found out that in Australia, it's, and in other places where there are, where there's tropics, it's pretty much whoever wants to sing, sings, males and females. I think we can speculate that the bias about male singing came from the fact that first, bird science began in continents where we were observing birds that for which that was true. There's another reason, and I don't want anyone to attack me when I say this. Many of the early ornithologists were men. We look for what we expect to see. And as more and more women have joined the field of ornithology, more and more research is being done on the habits of female birds. So that's kind of cool. And the good news is that the male ornithologists aren't upset at all, because it's like, okay, well, that's interesting. We didn't know that part, you know. So just wanted to throw that in there. So we have so much more going on. I want to play a few fun birds now. It's 11:43, and I want to make sure I have time for questions. But I just want you to hear some fun ones. And the next one I'm going to play is a recording of a colony of acorn woodpeckers. Now, before Andrea sets this one up, acorn woodpeckers are some of the largest woodpeckers in the state of California. And if you have any oak trees in your vicinity, you generally need a number of them, not just one or two. But if you get a few, you know, on your property or nearby your neighborhood, you will have acorn woodpeckers. Acorn woodpeckers gather acorns in the fall, and they drill holes in trees and fence posts and carports and roofs and wherever they can find a place. And they hide those acorns in there. And then they go back and drill those same holes later to get the acorns out again. So you might hear a drumming acorn woodpecker any time of year at all. They have, in order to make that hammering sound, they have to hit a tree really hard with their head. And so to prevent them from having a concussion, the creator put a bunch of spongy stuff in their head. I didn't open a woodpecker head, but somebody did. And it sort of protects the brain from that kind of activity. Acorn woodpeckers live in enormous colonies, several families at once. They have what they call granary trees where they store their food. They are quite promiscuous. Several boys mate with several girls and vice versa. And indeed, in the evening when they're young, they have a lot of sexual antics. People have seen baby birds jumping on top of each other and carrying on. And they're very cheerful looking. They've got a bright face, and they're really fun, and they're pretty darn tame too. So let's take a listen to a colony of acorn woodpeckers. Enough, I guess. Oh my gosh. Try to sleep through that. No. They are all over. There's like a place down in Hollister and San Benito where I go hiking. They're all over. They're all over up at the ranch where I keep the horse. I've got a few of them here. And they're just really friendly and really raucous and noisy. And I like their attitude. I just think they're very funny. They have a lot to say about the world. Andrea, I must apologize to you because I made you skip a bird, and I had an order and I just violated the order. The last bird that I want to play before I take questions and share resources is one of my absolute favorites. And those of you who have been up to Colorado know this bird, in Utah know this bird. If you've been to the sagebrush in Nevada, you know this bird. If you've been any place on farmland in California where there's open fields, you know this bird. This is a singer called the Western Meadowlark. This bird nests in fields, perches on fence posts, perches in the grass. not especially an attractive bird. It's just a plain brown bird. But listen to this voice. This is the Western Meadowlark. This is one of the birds that turned me on to birds in California. Pretty. Ain't that just so pretty? And that, and I remember eating cereal and hearing that bird outside the window and losing my mind and saying, Mom, what is that? What is that? It's just one of the loveliest sounds. And little sadness, there's a 40% decline in these birds due to habitat degradation. And because grassland birds suffer the most of that and some other factors. And we won't dwell on it today. If anyone ever wants me to do a presentation for one of your chapters on habitat preservations and things we can do, I'm happy to do that. But that is just one of my favorite songs in all the world. Don't hear too many where I live anymore, which is really a shame. I know where to find them, but they used to be everywhere and they're just kind of a rarity. Let's have some conversation and then I can share some resources that can help you bird independently on your own.
Well, if nobody else is going to speak up, I will.
Go ahead, Christy. Love it.
At Patton, we have, you know, when I used to love walking around Patton State Hospital because there's such old trees, and we had woodpeckers, and I used to laugh because woodpeckers sound like they're laughing. They just, it's just so funny. And I thought what I was hearing, some was a parrot, and it made that same sound as your little woodpecker there. So that's interesting.
Well, I do think they're laughing at us, Christy.
Yeah, I think
we're
so.
We're pretty weird anyway. They got to laugh at us.
Yeah.
And you might have heard parrots. I mean, there are some wild parrot flocks.
Yeah,
but
we do have some around this area.
We have them. The story is that they got loose. Somebody was trying to bring
them in
order, and they got loose and they spread all over the place. And I think they've also mated with some other birds.
Yeah.
Because we have some funny look. The other interesting thing, Susan, that we have, and I don't know about Christy, but we have geese that have become non-migratory.
Yeah.
Yes. They're just hanging out.
Yep.
And they fly right over our house at about 5 o'clock in the afternoon. And boy, can you hear them honking?
Yep.
They sound to me like tandem bicyclists with squeaky brakes up in the sky. Wait up! That is such a funny sound.
Yeah. We're here. Yep. We're here.
Yep. That's a good story, Christy, about those birds.
Yeah. And one of my friends is really into birding. And she told me in my neighborhood, she saw and heard like 11 different types of birds.
I think that's wonderful. That means that you have a relatively healthy ecosystem. Some rare, you say?
Yeah.
Wow. Well, you should go birding with her. You can help her and she can help you.
I know.
You know, it's such a cool thing. It's such a cool thing. I want to talk a little bit about resources and by the way, we didn't talk about scrub mm-hmm. jays or Steller's jays or Mexican jays or house finches. Or, I mean, like, this is impossible to do in an hour and a half. Mm-hmm. It just is. But I'll talk about some of the sound resources that are good. And then in another talk, if people want, I can talk about making your yard a bird-friendly place. I did an article for the Blind Californian on that years ago. But one of the best birding tools now available is called the Merlin Bird ID app. If you have an iPhone or an Android phone, or if you have a computer, either Apple or PC, or if you have a BrailleSense note taker, I'm imagining you could do it with the HumanWare note takers as well. You can download the Merlin Bird ID app. This is a free download. It is prepared by the Cornell Lab of Ornithology, which is the renowned scientific bird organization in the United States. Think of Cornell as the science research arm and Audubon as the advocacy arm. if you want to learn about legislation, now Audubon has marvelous resources too. I'll mention one in a moment. But if you want to learn about legislation, that's where you go. If you really want to learn about bird science, Cornell is your place. The Merlin Bird ID app is free, and it's free because Cornell is encouraging people to participate in what's called citizen science. We need data, and we need, or data, and we need people everywhere who want to share it participate. But if you just want to download it for fun, that's fine too. When you download the app, which is free, the first thing that you'll see once you open the app on your phone is it's going to say Bird Packs, P-A-C-K-S. Depending upon where you live in the United States, you can download a most likely bird population for your part of the country. So, for instance, I have downloaded the West Coast of California and Nevada. I may have Utah too. I think it's Oregon, Nevada, and California that I have. You can also download all of them. And that gets me about 1,120 species of birds with just that download. So you have your choice of what bird packs you like to download. They're not really gigabyte hogs. They really don't. They're not that difficult at all. When you open the app, there's several different IDs. On your homepage, you'll see something that says Sound ID. And if you tap on Sound ID, your phone or your computer or wherever you're recording will start recording immediately, and then it will come up with a list of most likely matches. And it's pretty darn accurate. I've had very good luck with that, identifying birds around here. It also automatically stores your recordings on your phone so that you can reference them later. You can also click on a link that says step-by-step bird ID, and it asks you questions. Where did you hear or see the bird? It asks visual questions. If that is, you know, relevant to you, it may ask you questions about habitat, because habitat is very important. You know, you're not likely to see an Arctic tern in downtown Cincinnati. So even if you thought that's what you heard, probably not. And then there's a photo ID section for people who want to capture those. There's a tab that says My Sound Recordings, and under that is all the sound recordings that you've ever stored in your Merlin Bird ID. And then there's also a tab called Explore. And if you click on Explore, you can type in a search name for any bird you're interested in, and it'll pull up recordings of that bird sound as well as information on habitat. And the recordings are submitted by amateur birders or professional birders, but unlike me, they have really good sound equipment. I do not. You can hear all kinds of cool birds. So if you just want a bird tour, you can play with that under the Explore. There's a tab called Life List, where you can write down every bird you've ever heard. And there's one called Settings. And under Settings, you have how to save your sightings. So it'll tell you where you can actually save them. It has supported birds. It'll tell you what birds throughout the world are supported. Like for me, it says 1,220 because that's what I have on my phone right now. You have English as the default language, but you can pick any world language just about. And you can choose whether you want to have the scientific names displayed or just the common names for the birds. So you can have all these settings you can pre-program them for yourself. And I have found the Merlin Bird ID enormously helpful as an on-the-go resource, whether I'm sitting in my garden or back with John in Nebraska visiting our family or out in New England or just, you know, on a trail somewhere. There's a bird I've never heard in my neighborhood before that I'm trying to get close enough to get a good recording on right now. So the Merlin Bird ID is really a wonderful one for that. There's also an Audubon. Let me just find this. Give me a minute to do my search here. The North American Audubon Society offers a 6-part course on birding by ear. It is screen reader friendly and accessible. You can use JAWS or NVDA, and all you have to do is search for Audubon Society North plus. I don't think you even have to write in the whole Audubon Society North America. Audubon Society plus bird sound course or auto ID course. What search term did I use? Audubon Society plus birding by ear is the search term. And it breaks down the sounds into the ones I did today, but it gives you even more, you know, so you've got trillers and whistlers and warblers and coughers and, you know, I mean, you name it, it's in there. And it's a very good source for learning birds. There are many from times ago that I can give you, but those are the most current. And then finally, there's an app called Pure Nature. The app itself is free. Produced by an ornithologist whose name is Lang Elliott. And it has something like over 100 different soundscape recordings in the app. And if you buy the whole set, it's $36.87. Or you can buy each soundscape that you're interested in for $1. So for instance, I have most of them, but I bought the California Dreaming. And when you open that up, there's a little piece at the beginning where he says, you know, we're in Central California at dawn. We're in a madrone forest. The date is such and such. And then he tells you what birds you're likely to hear. And then you can listen to the 8 or 10 or 12 minute recording.
Super cool. And the sound quality is really good.
It's so good. I mean, if I were a plagiarist, I would have just stole all those sounds for today. But I can't, you know, it's really fantastic. And that's I have a hard time writing to music because I get too involved in the music, but I can write to bird soundtracks. And so often when I'm writing, I will have that on in the background. It's a really wonderful way to learn about birds. Mm-hmm. I also have a whole list of, hold on just a minute. I have a lot of bard books. A lot of them are about bird science in general. I can give you the DB numbers on those if you wish today, or you guys can send me an email and I'll be happy to send you these. But there's a really wonderful one called Birdsong by the Season by Donald Kroodsma, Kroodsma. And I want to find this DB number because it's really my favorite. Would help if I knew how to spell. Birdsong by the Season, A Year of Listening to Birds by Donald Kroodsma. It's DBM 1195. That's DBM 1195. It's recorded in the Perkins studio. Donald Kroodsma, in addition to being a renowned ornithologist, when he retired, just wanted to make people fall in love with birds. So he grabbed his portable recorder and his headphones and he ran all over the country and he spent months in different places recording things. And he made this book where he tells you about the birds and tells you about the recordings, and the sound clips are part of the book. So you actually listen to the book and then hear the sound clips. Mm. And he's such a bird dude that he'll grab people off the road and say, "Want to listen to my headphones?" I mean, the guy is just crazy this way. And that's one of my favorite. I have a number of other books about birds. If you're curious, I can go through that now, or I can send you emails. It's whatever your pleasure. This is pretty much what I wanted to say to you today, and it's only 12 o'clock, but do you have other questions, other issues, anything you want to talk about?
Linda.
Yeah. Hi, Linda.
Hi. My favorite bird is our mockingbirds. I think they're so fascinating. I was living in Palm Springs, and I believe that I heard a mockingbird in my backyard sing like 26 calls within about 10 minutes.
You did. You absolutely did. Did your mockingbird sing at night?
Oh, beautiful. That's why I love them. I know they're mean birds.
They
steal eggs.
Not that often. No more than all the other pirates.
Okay. but they sing such beautiful, beautiful songs, and people get annoyed with them because they sing in the middle of the night and stuff, but I love it. It's almost like God is saying through a mockingbird, "I'm still here. I'm keeping the world, you know, on X axis and stuff.
I couldn't
but
agree.
Can you talk a little bit about mockingbirds? And
sure, sure. I actually have a good recording of a mockingbird that I did not send to Andrea, and I should have. I could try to play it through my phone, but it probably wouldn't sound all that great. But mockingbirds belong to a family of birds called Mimidae or Mimicry, and they share that family with other birds like thrashers and some of the orioles, and even worldwide with some of the mynas and the lyrebird. I mean, there's really interesting families, but they I'm not surprised to hear that you heard that bird sing 20 songs in 10 minutes. That's very common. They are another bird that's okay looking. They're brown, but they really distinguish themselves by their songs. And they not only imitate other birds, so you can figure out what birds are in your neighborhood
right.
by listening to your mockingbird.
Right.
But they also have their own song. And they...
Turkey.
Exactly. Or my grandpa used to say, it said, dirty. It's turkey. Rear. Chop, chop. Tawika. And one of the distinguishing features of a mockingbird, as opposed to a catbird or a thrasher, who are also mimickers, is that a mockingbird will generally repeat a phrase 4, 5, 6, 7 times.
Yeah.
Sometimes you're going, dude, mm-hmm. you know. But they will do that. The ones who sing at night are generally first year males, and they usually sing when it's moonlight out.
Oh.
And I'm with you. I love that song. I love the way the night catches it up and echoes it through the trees and the mm-hmm. streets and makes it bigger. It's one of my favorite sounds. They will also imitate things like car alarms,
cell phones,
frogs, and yeah, just they can pick up on just about anything.
Yep.
Is their hearing really good? Because I swear I heard one mimic my microwave, you know, timer when the microwave goes off.
Their hearing is fabulous.
Yeah,
their hearing is fabulous. And they'll imitate people's pet cockatiels. I mean, they will just, they will imitate anything. I love mockingbirds. I think of them as John Coltrane on a really good night, you know, just jamming. I mean, they just go. You can always tell a mockingbird from the true species, because whenever they mimic another species, they're a little bit off key.
Yeah.
You know, so they're, you're going, okay, you're not really a scrub jay. You just think you are. But
Right.
But
You mentioned the mourning dove, and I have to say, I know they're common as dirt, but I love the mourning doves. And there's apparently a Native American legend I heard somewhere that if you hear one, it means someone has died. I don't know if anybody else has ever heard that, but they do sound a little sad to me whenever
they
I hear
do.
Them.
They,
but they're
they
very
do.
Evocative, because we grew up with them. They were all over the place where we lived.
Yeah. And they're still here. You know,
what's the difference between the pigeon? And I mean, sometimes I'm like, is that a pigeon or is that a mourning dove?
Okay, that's an excellent question. So a pigeon is also a kind of dove. It's called a rock dove.
Right.
A mourning dove will give you this call, woo, 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 or sometimes just woo, which is the nest building.
Yeah. Oh.
Okay.
Oh.
Okay.
That's what I'm hearing now.
That's what you're hearing now. Now the rock dove it's a much deeper voice. It goes, brr, 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 brr. So it's deeper in the throat.
Mm-hmm.
There's a band-tail pigeon that's a little bit, it goes woo, 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 but you won't have those as often. And some people confuse mourning doves with great horned owls.
Oh, no, we have those too. I have one in my neighborhood at night.
And it's a different sound entirely.
Yeah.
It's deeper and it has a different cadence to it.
Yeah.
Andrea, I'd never heard the legend about the mourning dove, but of course it is spelled like M-O-U-R-N, like to mourn.
Yeah, it's not mourning. It's M-O-U. And so that's why it does sound sad to me.
Yeah.
Hear it.
It does, but I don't mind that they're common. They're
I like them.
As a matter of fact, I'm a little worried about them. We've got an invasive now called a Eurasian collar dove.
Oh.
And there's a little bit of a concern because they're starting to encroach on the territory, just like the house wrens are starting to encroach a little on the Buick's wren territory. And so there are things to watch. But yeah, I my doves are my, you know, I always have food out for my doves because I love them so much. They They're wonderful parents. They just take beautiful care of their babies, but they build their nests in dumb places. Like they'll build them in a crook of a tree where it's going to fall off too easily. And I don't,
oh.
You know, I always want to leave a note that says, if you put it up there, it might be safer, but you know,
yeah.
But they're just so sweet. And they're predominantly, if you have any sunflower seed, they'll come for that. They're very sunflower, or safflower or saffron seed. They like that a lot, and they'll come to gardens. They startle easily, which is a good thing because they're big and they can be jumped on.
Yeah. You know?
Their wings make a squeaking sound when they fly. Yeah. So if you ever hear one take off and go, squeak, 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 that's actually their wings making that sound.
Uh-huh.
I adore mourning doves. Well, there isn't really a bird I don't like, even the parasitic cowbird and things. You know, they have a place in the universe. You know, but I will protect some birds from other birds for sure.
I love hawks.
Oh, I do too.
I hear them in my neighborhood. Pew, pew. And I'm like, oh, Mr. Hawk, what are you looking for?
Probably a red shoulder. That's the most likely, you know, for that call. And there are red tails. There's red shoulders. There's kestrels, which are a little sparrow hawk that go kali, 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 kali. I'm pretty sure you're hearing a red shouldered hawk. They're wonderful. Yep. Yep. They eat other birds and they eat mammals.
Yeah, they eat pigeons. That's good.
Oh, pigeons are maligned unfairly, I think. Pigeons are no more, less, you know, troublesome.
Pigeons are just, they're not very smart. And that's the problem. They go back for their mates. That's the other thing. If a pigeon gets killed, the mate will come back. And so
that says something kind of.
That's a strange thing, but
they mate for life. I mean, they're not any stupider than a turkey, you know. I don't know. I just don't. They've got their virtues. I feel protective about pigeons, even though they drive some people crazy.
Oh, I don't like. We have too many of them, and
People complain about crows too, and crows are some of the smartest birds on the planet. They are
very smart.
That's a family called Corvidae, and they have very high social orders, and they're really, really brilliant. Crows, ravens, magpies, nutcrackers, and jays all belong to this really smart family of birds that are fun to watch.
I didn't realize we had ravens. We have a bunch of ravens in our area.
Aren't they beautiful?
Well,
do you know how to tell a raven from a crow? That's right. It's deeper and it's slower.
Yeah.
Yeah. And a crow is usually caw, 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 caw. They're faster. Yeah. They usually flock together. They fly differently too. Yeah. You must live in a cool place to have hawks. So that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where do you live?
In Highland by the foothills. So
that's
We're about 5 minutes up the road from starting to climb to Big Bear.
Oh, no wonder. No wonder. Yeah. Yeah. That is really a special place to be. Oh my. Anything else anybody wants to see? So yeah, mockingbirds are cool. Doves are cool. They all have such interesting strategies for surviving. And I will tell you, you don't want to hear this, but since 1970, the World Wildlife Fund, the Cornell Lab of Ornithology, and the Audubon Societies estimate that we have lost in the neighborhood of 3 billion individual birds.
Not surprised.
Climate change, mm-hmm. habitat degradation, exotic imports, speciation, window collisions, domestic cats.
Yeah. Yep.
It's pretty tough, but I said I wouldn't do that, and then I did it, but I can't help it.
But it's true. I have a bird. Go ahead.
If you could maybe just, I don't know, expound just a little bit about what we can do about, you know, saving birds in our own environment. And then I have kind of an off-topic question.
Sure.
Do you know anything about coyote calls?
I know a lot about coyote calls because we have them all over where I live. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Christy knows too,
obviously. We have them.
Yeah, we have them. We We live very close to a nature reserve, and so and then we have a lake in our on our complex, and so we have ducks and geese and different.
I know we have them,
but we have coyotes at night that have all these different calls, and I just wonder, what are you saying?
Yeah.
Well, that depends on the time of year. This is pup season coming up now. So you're going to hear a lot of that kind of, you know, pack behavior when the puppies are born. There's a call that they do when they make a kill. I can't imitate it, but I know what that sounds
like. You know it. It's guttural.
It's pretty much there.
Yep.
They're another animal that's rather unfairly maligned, I have to say. And thank God they've been able to survive. You know, we can learn to live with them. I think, I know that I wear my politics on my sleeve, and, I will just be honest about what it is, and nobody has to take it if they don't want to. Is that okay? I mean, that's what can you do for your local birds? Lots. One of the first things you can do is plant things that bring birds to your garden. Birds like, and if you even if you live in an apartment, there are things you can do, but birds like levels of landscape. So for instance, if you have herbs on the ground, and then you've got some potted plants, and then you've got some hedges, and then you've got some trees, that gives different birds who dwell in different places to go and live their lives. So doves are more likely to be on the ground. Your finches are more likely to be up high, you know, that kind of thing. You may not have control over what's planted if you live in some sort of a condominium complex. And as I do, we have some limitations on that. But there are things we can do. If you can plant native, if you can plant berries, or if you can plant things like butterfly bush, or milkweed, that attracts both insects and birds, and it's very, very good for them. What birds need from you is food, water, and shelter. It's a triangle. They often need the water more than the food, so if you could create a makeshift bird bath that you set up on a table out of a plastic lid, you know, with a little, turning sand dial or something into something, just fill it up with water. They need to drink all the time, and they also groom several times a day, so they've got to use the water. There are many, many kinds of bird feeders that you can use. Hopper feeders, where you actually open the feeder and put the seed inside. It's got a perching shelf. There are tube feeders that you can hang full of seed, and a lot of the little birds, like the various finches, will come and perch on the little outside perches for that. There are nectar feeders for hummingbirds and also for orioles. And then the shelter would be, if you don't have natural trees around, you can buy what are called nest boxes, which we used to call bird houses. And they have different hole sizes. So you get a little tiny hole, one for a chickadee, and you might get a larger one for a golden crowned sparrow. And a lot of the bird stores will actually do some consulting with you and help you hang things and put them in the right places, you know, for your birds. And then there's some things if you have a lot of glass on your house, it really helps if you buy some manner of decal to put on the window so the bird can see and won't fly into the glass. If you can avoid pesticides at all cost, those robins that you love to hear eat all those worms in the ground, and they get that pesticide in the body and it's curtains. It's really bad. So encouraging, you know, places where you live, you know, not to use insecticides, pesticides. There are other ways to handle, you know, bug pests. That's really, really important. Because I read Audubon magazine, I follow the legislation in Congress. And if I know there's an important bill coming up that has to, you know, do with, bird habitat, I can write letters for that, you know, do that kind of thing. If there's a bird habitat I want to help with or a water issue I'm concerned about. One of the most important things you can do is be a listener, be an avid birder, and share that love with your neighbors, because the way that we preserve the world we live in is to love it. And if we love it first, we will find our ways to save it. And when you look at the whole global crisis, it's easier to go, I can't do anything. So you do what Gwendolyn Brooks, one of my favorite African-American poets, says, you brighten the corner where you are. Mm-hmm. You brighten it with your own knowledge. You brighten it with pesticide-free environment. You brighten it by protecting your birds. You've got to, if you have a cat, please, 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 please
keep it indoors.
Keep it indoors. I know this is hard. I adore cats before anybody see, but even well-fed cats can't help it. They like to hunt.
Yeah.
And they're exotics. They were not, you know, here originally. And, you know, there's enough natural hunters out there with the coyotes and the owls and such. I know people don't like to hear that because you want your cat to be free. But I know some pretty happy indoor cats with condo kitty. In fact, they rule the whole house if you want to know the truth.
Oh my gosh. All you have to do is come over here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They're happy, right?
Exactly. You know? Oh, absolutely.
and it's just so important to do that. And, you know, I'm that way with dogs. So I don't let my dog just run around because they can hassle, you know, animals mm-hmm. too. If you think about all the wildlife in your garden, what makes your lizards happy? What makes your butterflies happy? What makes your butterflies happy makes the bees happy. And what makes them happy makes the hummingbirds happy. And what makes them happy makes the other birds happy. And there's so many things. One thing I did 2 years ago, I planted a whole array of sunflowers. I just filled my garden with different colored sunflowers. And I had all these birds hanging out on the flowers, pulling the seeds out toward the end of the summer. It was so cool. And then the bees were pollinating them. And it was just a really exciting thing. Learn, learn, learn. That's my message. Learn and share it. And I did want to say, I by accident have evolved something that I'm now calling my bird share practice. And this started because after I retired, people would approach me and say, will you do a birding seminar for us? And I've done some for school kids on bird population and wonder of birds. And I've done kids science fairs and I've done Audubon tours and I've done birdability presentations with other marvelous women, Bonnie Lukowitz and Judith Smith, birdability plans, accessible birding tours for people of all abilities. So we're talking about wheelchair use. We're talking about people who might be on the spectrum, all kinds of things. But anyway, what I've discovered is that I really enjoy doing this and I really love sharing this. So if anyone wants me to present via Zoom, you know, to a local group or in person or whatever, I'm really happy to do it. With the caveat that I'm only one person, there are great bird presenters all over. I don't charge anything because I want us to make this a bird happy planet. And so I can do one on finches. I can do one on climate. I can do one on, I mean, if you tell me, I'll do the research and do what you want. And I'm an email click away or a phone number away. I'm very open about that. So anything I can do to help, I'd be, and if you ever want to just send me a recording and say, what the heck is that? I'll try to tell you. I won't always know, but mm-hmm. you know, it's that's how we share, and we share mm-hmm. them with each other.
I have a granddaughter who is very much, she loves lizards and butterflies and birds, and you know, she's very much into STEM.
Yes.
And so how, she's in seventh grade. How, what kinds of things do you know that I can do to maybe get her interest more piqued? She has some California quails that her godmother sent her an incubator.
Oh, nice.
They have two, but I don't think they're doing anything right now with them. And she's getting a little tired of them, but she's had them for like 2-3 years.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There's a few things that come to mind. There's lots of good. I have a niece who's 9, who's just a prodigy with nature stuff. And you know about the Mighty Girl books?
No,
Christy, because I thought I saw that you liked the Mighty Girl website or whatever. Mighty Girl is an organization that evolved in the last 20 years to promote all careers and possibilities for women and girls. And they start at the picture book level, and then they go up all the way through the curriculum. and they do a lot of science, a lot of STEM. You can, if you go check out the Mighty Girl website, you can probably find a lot of stuff. Is she much of a reader?
She goes on and off.
So did I. No, that's not true. I always read. that makes sense. But finding those resources, if you can locate Audubon Bird Clubs in your area, because they don't just do birds. When you learn about birds, you learn about whole ecosystems.
Right.
Invite her to go on some hikes with you, some tours with you. See what's being sponsored by your local science centers. We have one up here called Youth Science Institute, and they're always offering classes. And offer to do it with her. If she's really into lizards, you've got Western fence lizards. We've got all kinds that she can play with.
She loves them. She just...
And you could set up a terrarium and safely house a lizard for a while and let her or him go when you're ready, and just find out what they eat. They usually eat a lot of crickets, I think. But I would say do that, follow her where her interests are and just feed that interest. Oh, I just heard that the Science Museum is doing an exhibit on such. Do you want to meet over there this weekend?
That kind of thing. I wish I could do that. She lives in Marietta, which is 50 miles away from us.
Then just keep talking to her.
I could get to your house faster and better than I could get to theirs.
Is YSI still only up there? I thought it was maybe they had more of them.
It's all over the place. Well, I know they're all over the Bay Area.
Because I went to Yosemite with them when I was about 8. They also call it You Stupid Idiots. That was the other thing.
Oh, that's too funny. Oh, my gosh.
That's funny.
This is Linda. There's a science center, a big science center here at Lake Diamond that's not far from Marietta.
Paris.
Has all kinds of nature stuff. And then there's the Living Desert in Palm Desert that is wonderful. Oh, my gosh. It's such a sensory experience. So there's just all kinds of.
Marietta Science Center. So if you pointed her to those.
Yeah. Do you think it's too... is Audubon too, I'm looking for, maybe I could get a magazine, but is Audubon too grown up?
Oh, I don't think so. I don't think so. I mean, but let me make a note to myself, Christy, birding mags for young people.
Yeah.
Let me just see what I can find. I did this for another girl who wanted horse magazines. Oh, there's got to be.
Yeah.
We'd better start it.
We need to start one.
we can definitely. I'll look into that right now because I'm curious. I have a friend who's learning Braille, and she wrote her first poem about horses, and she wants it to be published in a kids' horse magazine.
Oh.
So I've been looking for places for her. So we'll find something.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's cool. I have a bird. Sorry, what?
I said I'm glad we recorded this.
Yeah. I have a bird that I always tell Ed every time I hear it, it sounds like a Cracker Jack whistle. Remember the little tiny Cracker Jack whistles that we used to have?
Yep.
And it sounds just like that. And I crack.
I know
up
what
every
it is.
Time what is it?
It's a starling.
Starlings are
another mimicker, and they have that really high, is that what you're thinking of? Yep, that's him. That is the starling. And they're not native. They were released into Central Park, 26 of them back in the 1700s or 1800s. Somebody wanted to bring all the birds of Shakespeare to North America. And the starlings got loose, and you know the rest of the story.
Yep. Well, I don't know if that's what the one that my son said, that they're like, they're invasive.
They are.
But there's a great book called what is it called? It's not Beethoven. It's maybe Mozart.
Oh, yeah, the composer who had that starling.
Yeah, is it Mozart star? No, I don't know. Somebody's starling. And it's a really interesting book about this gal who actually adopted, because she felt like starlings get a bad rap. So she adopted one, and I think it's Mozart's starling. I'm almost sure that's it. And I don't remember the author's name, but it was very interesting. because they're carrion eaters. They eat, they do eat, I believe, eat, you know, dead things.
Yep. Uh-huh. I think they do. Yeah.
And
yeah.
because of that, they kind of get a bad rap. And because,
yeah, but if we did, if the birds didn't eat the dead things, where would we all be?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, no, we need them to do that. It's, I'm almost sure it's Mozart's Starling, and it is on Bard.
Cool. I'll check it out.
Very good. Very cool.
Well, guys, we are about out of time, so we are going to stop.
All right.
Here, but I want to thank Susan. This has been fabulous. And Susan and I are doing a workshop Thursday night. So for those of you who are here,
oh, I won't be
please
here.
Try to join us on Thursday night if you can. I think that'll be recorded as well.
Good.
We hope so. Yeah. Yeah.
We can.
Thank you. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I just want to thank everybody for coming. I mean, this is, I feel like I'm being allowed to do my favorite thing for a call like this. And it's just been delightful. So thank you all very, very much. Oh.